To feed or not to feed? That's the question facing medical professionals and families about the use of artificial nutrition and hydration. Hi, welcome to the Bioethics Channel, a production of the Center for Practical Bioethics. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. practicalbioethics.org. Dr. David Katzeret joins us. He is Associate Professor of Geriatrics at the Pennsylvania University School of Medicine. He is author of Last Acts, Discovering Possibility and Opportunity at the End of Life. And he will be in Kansas City November 13th, 2010, to discuss the issue of artificial nutrition and hydration. Dr. Katzeret, have we made any progress on this issue in recent years? Are we any closer to reaching a consensus on when and under what circumstances we should use feeding tubes?
Well, the short answer is I think we've made some progress in some ways. For instance, I think there's more of an awareness on the part, certainly of healthcare providers, that these are issues that we need to pay attention to. These are questions for which patients and families need more support. In terms of whether there's actually a consensus about whether, when, and how these sorts of treatments should be used, no, I don't think we're near to an agreement, really. On the other hand, I'm not sure agreement, consensus, as you said, is a realistic goal. I mean, these are very difficult decisions for many patients and families, decisions that are emotionally very difficult and value-laden and not sort of decisions, for the most part, that a society will come to a consensus about. I think our goal, for the most part, should be to set some broad limits on whether and when some of these treatments should be used, and at least some guidelines about when we can safely agree to disagree.
Obviously, there are a lot of challenges in this arena, cultural and religious beliefs, different regulations, economic pressures, political intrusion. These just add to the difficulty, do they not?
They are, and that's, I think, part of the reason why I don't think that a consensus is certainly not within reach now, and I think ultimately a consensus probably will continue to be elusive. There are too many forces at play. People are coming to these decisions, these choices, from a variety of very, very different perspectives, and many of those perspectives are more or less fixed. People certainly who take a very strong religious view, for instance, that tube feeding always should be used, and this is something that some people do believe very strongly, you know, those are beliefs that will be very difficult, if not impossible, to erase, nor should we really try to. You know, those are views that I think we can work with, we can work around, but we can't expect people to jettison firmly held, for instance, religious or cultural beliefs. So not only are the issues complex, but there are issues, there are perspectives, there are beliefs that really are going to be very, very inflexible that we're going to, as a society, need to learn to work around.
Is it fair to say that some of the problems around this issue arise from a misunderstanding of what artificial nutrition and hydration actually is and what it can do?
Yes, that's definitely true. And I think that's one of the ways in which we've begun to make the most progress in the last 5 or 10 years. Some of the common misconceptions, one of the most common, I think, is that tube feeding is feeding, meaning that it's food in the same way, or at least with the same meaning, that food is provided at the dinner table, rather than looking at artificial nutrition as a medical treatment like the use of antibiotics or hemodialysis. And I think that, that those different ways of thinking about exactly the same treatment, so is it a medical treatment with medical indications and contraindications, or is it food, is it basic care that should always be provided? That's a pretty hard and fast dividing line that I think continues to divide many patients and families. But I do think that as a healthcare profession, we've begun to think about tube feeding more, not entirely and not always, and certainly not everybody, but we've begun to think about it more as a medical treatment that should be thought about, should be discussed, and about which decisions should be made in the same way that you would make rational, logical, carefully reasoned decisions about whether to treat a patient with antibiotics or whether hemodialysis is useful in a particular situation. So in that regard, I think we have made some progress.
Your session in Kansas City this November concerns comfort feeding only as a way to reframe withholding and withdrawal of artificial nutrition and hydration. You'll be joined by Dr. Dan Browner and Dr. Joan Tino, who have done a lot of work in this arena. What's your view of that concept, the concept of comfort feeding?
Well, I think the concept is a useful way of reframing the discussion about tube feeding. The discussion that we have every day with patients and families. The challenge, I think, for many of us who have these discussions, and you know, the challenge for families in particular, is that the decision often is between tube feeding or nothing, meaning when a patient is no longer able to eat or no longer able to eat safely without a risk of aspiration, meaning breathing in food or liquids. Then the choice they face is either to place a feeding tube or to do nothing, meaning to withdraw all nutrition. And I think that's a choice that's very, very difficult for patients and families to make. And generally, we're talking about these decisions. We're talking about patients with advanced dementia, and so we're talking about families. This idea of comfort feeding is a way of reframing that and giving families a third option. So tube feeding, no feeding, or feeding, allowing patients access to nutrition and hydration, at least to the degree that it's consistent with their goals and is consistent with an improved quality of life. By giving them that third option, it gives them an out, if you will, and I think makes what is often a logical progression to an automatic, almost feeding tube, not quite so automatic, and it gives people, patients, sometimes families, usually, and certainly healthcare providers, a chance to think critically about whether a feeding tube really is the right decision, and at least whether it's the only decision could be made. And so it improves the number of options that are open to people.
Your colleague on this Kansas City panel is Dr. Daniel Browner of the University of Chicago School of Medicine. He points to a parallel between CPR and feeding tubes, writing recently that, quoting here, it reveals an underlying irony in care at the end of life. We have unwittingly created a custom of care that automatically links our patients to technologies that often merely increase their agony at the end of their lives. What do you think?
Oh, I think Dan is absolutely right. I think whenever we're uncertain as a society about a treatment, either ethically, financially, or morally, or legally, we tend to make hard and fast rules, or at least we tend to streamline procedures so cleanly that something always happens. So do not resuscitate orders, for instance, and the use of cardiopulmonary resuscitation near the end of life. I think that's a perfect example and a perfect analogy. It's something that's so value-laden, that's so difficult, and so emotional. We, as a society, deal with those emotions and that difficulty by creating a rule. And that rule generally is, well, everybody gets CPR unless there's a DNR order. That's our way of bypassing a lot of discussion, a lot of thought, and a lot of careful consideration. We just say CPR is automatic. And I think to a lesser degree, that's what we've done, certainly in feeding tube use in the nursing home. In general, particularly given the nursing home regulations and the way they're written, weight loss of a patient, when a patient in a nursing home resident loses weight, that becomes a quality indicator. That's something that nursing homes really have to pay attention to because it makes them look bad. And so the reflex, and it is almost a reflex in many nursing homes, is that when a patient is unable to eat, when they begin to lose weight, then the automatic response, sometimes as automatic as a CPR, the automatic response is to place feeding tubes. And it's not inevitable. There are ways to avoid that. Careful discussions, hospice care is one option. But the default is the use of a feeding tube, just like the default is cardiopulmonary resuscitation for those patients who are admitted to a hospital.
In a New England Journal of Medicine article in 2005, you state, paraphrasing here, that we need to figure out how to make these decisions to improve care for all patients with serious illness in a way that is compassionate, ethically sound, and clinically reasonable. That's a tall order, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I think we can start by making those decisions. And I think too often what happens these days is these decisions really aren't made. These are treatments that just sort of, for lack of a better word, happen. These are decisions that seem to be automatic. As I said before, a nursing home resident loses weight. A recommendation is made to put a feeding tube in. That's presented to family members as the logical treatment and the only treatment, and the feeding tube is placed. That's, at least in my clinical experience, the way this happens a lot. And so a useful first step, although these sorts of decisions that are careful, thoughtful, evidence-based, and compassionate may be out of reach, at least we can start by encouraging families to actually thoughtfully make the decision to have these sorts of discussions, to recognize that a feeding tube may not be the best decision for somebody's mother or father. It may not be the only decision, and at very least, this is something that they can think about thoughtfully, just as they thought about the decision about whether their father should go into the nursing home, just like they thought about the decision about whether dialysis for kidney failure was a good idea. They can use those same sorts of decision processes. They can use that same careful, empathetic consideration to think about and to talk about, hopefully, whether a feeding tube is really the right decision for their father as well.
Dr. David Kasseret is Associate Professor of Geriatrics at the Pennsylvania University School of Medicine. He is author of Last Acts, Discovering Possibility and Opportunity at the End of Life, available on Amazon.com. And he will be in Kansas City November 13th, 2010, to discuss the issue of artificial nutrition and hydration. For more information on that conference and to register, visit Kurzan.bioethics.net. That's Kurzan.bioethics.net. I'm Laurel LeBoux. Thanks for listening to the Bioethics Channel.